The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, March 20th, 2009, and this is episode number 169. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, bringing you the best in motorcycle road racing coverage. Got a really, really long and very hilarious call with Jules today. Talk, of course, a little bit about the World Superbike races in Qatar that we just had, and some other fun stuff, including a kind of a game that Jules made up of motorcycle road racing deathmatch, you might call it. Something like that. It's fun. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you do. And we'll have that here coming up very, very shortly. And after that, we've got a really cool call that Jim Race did with Eugene Laverty again. So it's kind of nice. We're getting a racer on the show regularly here, and it's always interesting to hear from Eugene, and good stuff. So thanks a lot to Jim and Eugene for doing that call for us. And let's see, before we get to that, I want to send a big shout out thank you to Tony Chen and Dave Jevons. Not 100% sure if I'm pronouncing that last name right there, Dave. I hope I didn't massacre it too much. But thanks a lot, Tony and Dave. I do appreciate it. You guys were kind enough to donate to the MotoGPOD cause. Helps pay for all the bills, the bandwidth, the Skype calls, the beer, everything else that helps drive MotoGPOD. So, good stuff. Let's see. Other than that, not a whole lot of administrative stuff right now. We're just going to jump right into the show. Been kind of falling behind the past couple of weeks on my email and things, so if you haven't heard from me and you were expecting it, I apologize. Maybe send me a reminder one or something like that if we've got something going on, because I've been very, very busy, and I know you guys don't want to tune in and hear about how busy I am. You want to tune in and hear about motorcycle racing and stuff like that. So why don't we jump right into that call with Jules? All right, got Jules on the phone. How you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing good, Bob. Welcome back.
Thanks. Thank you very much for taking over last week. Had a big week last week. Actually, didn't get as much accomplished as I wanted to. My new Navy job is taking up a lot of my time that I'm not paid for, and I'm not really happy about that.
Do you get to push people around?
Do I get to push people around? A little bit. Yeah,
Well, that's worth it. That makes it worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's always the benefits, right? But Oh, and hey, I want to send a big shout out to my son, and I hope this is not premature because I told him that he should not count his chickens, but he's about 90% certain that he got promoted to corporal E4.
Hey, cool. So, all right. Congrats.
Yes. Thank you. And that's kind of cool. So my son is now, if this is true, he's a non-com in the Marine Corps, and that's actually a pretty cool thing. So I'm happy for him. All right. Enough blathering on about that. There were some races last weekend. It's kind of cool. We're getting into spring. We've got things happening.
Yep. We had Qatar and World Superbikes, and once again, very interesting races.
Yeah, and once again, I liked race one better than race two.
Was there a difference? Yeah, no. Definitely, race one was more interesting. The final result was contested for a lot longer for first place, and the battle. Oh, I have to say that the battle between Haga and Biaggi for the second place was actually a little more entertaining than the first one. But
yeah,
both races were very good. And I actually watched very carefully. I watched the Super Bowl this time because I really wanted to see how the format works. And in PI, it was still very much let's try this thing out. Everybody really didn't know what to do. I think this time around, the strategy started to come into play. And, you know, people were really, like, working with the qualifying, the two qualifiers and the three sessions. It was really interesting. Very, very interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had a chance to watch the qualifying session, so I'm just sort of throwing this one out there. But if it is as much like Formula One as I think it is, which just from the sounds of things, it sounds very much like what Formula One's got going on. And with Formula One, the qualifying is more interesting than the racing, not setting the bar very high. I know, I understand, but well, we're going to hear about that from the Formula One blog, folks.
I will say this though, that I'm really getting more and more of the mind that we should just get rid of qualifying tires.
I tend to agree. I think that
in this sport and in MotoGP, right. Basically, to me, it's starting to make less and less sense. Super Bowl is like a perfect example of where you want to be on the race car. You really are deciding who's the fastest people, and by putting the qualifier the thing on, like imagine the situation where you use your qualifier, then you're going to sit for the rest of the session because you're not going to beat your time on a race tire. So you go out, you do your session on, you do your two laps, the warm up and then the fast lap on your qualifier. And then you're done for the 12 minutes, right? Because what are you going to do? Go out there on race tires and think you can actually beat your time? No way.
Right, right. I agree on that level. And I also agree on my argument that racing should trickle down to street. And I'm sure that some of the stuff they can learn from making an excellent qualifier will translate into better tires overall. But it's still a little bit like they're spending a lot of time and resources and money on this one special tire that's designed to last one hot lap.
Yeah.
And that you're right. It's a little bit counterproductive. Maybe we should make better race tires or that sort of thing. I can see that argument big time. And then obviously also the, like you say, where, you know, the strategy comes into it so much that you're either circulating at the beginning of the session or like you say, you go out and do one lap and then you just sit in the box. You know, something like that. Those situations do sort of come up. Yeah. Artificial rules, though, like where the tire that you use in qualifying must be the same tire that you start the race with and stuff, not 100% totally convinced on that.
No, I'm not either. But I think that so it's very hard to police. Again, it's one of those rules to be hard to police because how do you police right. a tire being a quote-unquote race tire? But, you know, I mean, I like the idea of there being very little choice for the tires, and then you kind of randomly get one. And for qualifying, for race, they're basically all pretty much the same stock. They came off the same batch, you know. So your settings, you get, you know, it's good for the teams too. They get to work on their settings. If they want to sandbag, they can sandbag for real instead of like, you know, like sandbagging on qualifying and then realizing like in free practice that they're screwed, you know. So
I mean,
I don't think anybody does that in qualifying, but anyway, it was very interesting. And Haga, I believe what happened in Phillip Island is that he didn't use a qualifier in the first session, and that's why he ended it so far. Actually, in the second session, he was saving the qualifier for the last session, and it almost doesn't make any sense, right? Because if you're starting on the first front rows, which is what you're fighting for in the first session. Sorry, in the final session, in the third session, I mean, you're basically starting up front. He was able to start out of 14th place and get to the front each time. So I think that the qualifiers were in Qatar were probably used early on during the first two sessions and then for the last session, because you want to get into the front couple of rows. Then it doesn't really matter so much whether, I mean, it certainly doesn't matter whether you're first or fourth. It's like a few feet.
I could. I mean, definitely a factor in those in the first two sessions, and you might well be right that, you know, it's better to be the bottom guy of the first group than the top guy of the second group, right?
Yeah, or not making it to the second group. That's the worst.
And I think that happened a lot in
Phillip Island.
Yeah, and it happens in Formula One where they don't even have the special qualifying tires. You know, they're just using, but it, the same sort of scenario where the decisions that they make can affect the entire qualifying session. But it does bring a huge element of strategy and planning and fiddling around that is kind of interesting to watch. I think though that you're right that a true qualifying tire would not be necessarily the best way to go. Now, are they though in World Supers? Are they using a Q tire?
Yeah.
Okay, so they have a specific Q tire.
Yep.
And
it really only lasts. You can tell because the guys who are not on a qualifier are out there for five or six laps, and the guys on the qualifier do their hot lap, and then they're just circulating the circuit. You know, watching out that they don't get in somebody's line. You know.
Yeah, and that kind of does defeat the purpose a little bit of what we've got going on here.
That's my feeling too. So anyway, but it was very interesting to watch. I don't think I'll be watching Super Bowl. regularly, but I wanted to watch one complete session, so to kind of satisfy my curiosity about how it really works. And yeah, it was very interesting, I thought. And they also had this very interesting graphic where they show you how close they are to completing each, rather than just you know, having a little I1, I2, I3, I4, they actually have a little line that's like showing them exactly how much before they're going to hit the next checkpoint. So that was kind of interesting. The transponders are getting really accurate, I think, you know, or GPS or whatever they're running on there. Yeah, well, then we had a good race. Two good races. Yes. Yeah,
I thought so. Super, super good. Interesting stuff. Now, I'm not sure why or where I picked this one up or whatever, but I was under the impression they were going to do a night race. So I was a little surprised when it was not a night race.
No. I thought that was a very big deal. Actually, I remember that being discussed a lot in the forums and stuff last year, that Superbike was specifically not allowed to do that race at night.
And actually, this time
of year,
there
was a cost thing also for them. The organization, I believe, has to pay for all the electricity used and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, it was very specifically done for MotoGP. And there was some talk about, like, well, the first year they'll do it just for MotoGP, and the next year they'll basically do it for all. But no, I think that that MotoGP wants to keep that their, like, little, you know, extra
crown jewel sort of a thing. Yeah. They and actually, this time of year, the night race doesn't make sense. Even in April, what is it? April 12th, I think, that MotoGP starts. Mm-hmm. That's pretty early in the year. It's still not very hot, and it cools off so quickly in the desert.
I know. They had those problems last year, remember? Exactly.
And they may still have those problems this year.
Yep. I think they will. They started earlier last year, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, they were in March last year, and it was just insane. But I mean, and they wanted to move the race later in the calendar, but the whole deal was that Qatar, part of the contract was that Qatar was going to be the first race of the MotoGP calendar, and the powers that be there at Qatar held to that,
right?
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I am looking forward to it in a lot of ways. Well, one, because it'll mean MotoGP starting, and two, it was like beautiful to watch. The way the light was mm-hmm. was just different, and it really worked, and I thought it was cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but enough blathering on about MotoGP that's still a little less than a month away. Right. Yeah. let's talk about World Super Dupers. You want to go down to qualifying real quick, or?
I don't have any of the results in front of me. I don't really feel like talking about the details. I mean,
I don't know a lot of the details. All I have is the qualifying, is the results right here in front of me, and I agree. I mean, other than let's real quick, Spies was on pole.
Yeah, again.
Yes. Jakob Smirts second, Biaggi third, and Noriyuki Haga fourth. Which I think
and
all
Haga,
of those are
by the
interesting.
Way, really had to fight to get in there. Ducati has never been good at this track. In superbikes, and it continues to be a problem for them. But you know, both Smirts and Haga were up there, so
right.
Some of it got worked out, but you could tell Haga had to really dig deep to get on the front row, and he knew he had to.
Yeah, and Fabrizio's teammate to show you that the Ducati Fabrizio, who is Haga's teammate, was down there in 10th. So right. You know, the front row was an interesting mix because you got Biaggi on the Aprilia and you know, Smirts riding the Ducati, but for the effect non-factory team, Guandolini Racing or whatever they're called.
Right.
You know, it was interesting that the fact that it turned out that way. But yeah, let's jump into race one.
So, you know, Ben Spies being on pole two races in a row is quite amazing. I mean, these are tracks he's never been to ever. Right, and he takes pole. I also thought that Aprilia and Biaggi being on the front row two weekends in a row, incredible. It's just incredible. I'm really, really impressed with Spies and with Aprilia and Biaggi also. But Aprilia as a and the Yamaha too, because the R1 this year is incredible. It's just I think that Haga's probably kicking himself a little bit about leaving. That bike.
I think I predicted that last year.
Yeah, you did. You did. That bike actually, like, this is amazing because I actually started looking at the R1 website and thinking, like, you know, I used to have a 98 R1, and I'm like, yeah, it's been a while since I've had one. And this one is really, it's an amazing motorcycle. The stuff that they've done this year is so, it's such a paradigm shift from what inline fours do normally that, I'm incredibly impressed. And that V4 that Aprilia is doing, again, amazing. So,
yeah,
having Aprilia first year in superbikes, you know, I don't know how long, and doing this well, it's fantastic. Just fantastic.
Yeah, they really did. They jumped right out of the gate as a team effort, a factory effort. And I mean, part of it is, you know, Biaggi's talent, but it's not only that, because as we're going to talk about here in a minute, well, I mean, Nakano is a very, very talented rider too. Uh-huh. I do think though that Biaggi might be the next level up. But in any case, they're getting results.
What's interesting is that Biaggi is working with a lot of his old crew from way back in the 90s. And so, like, you see a lot of, like, gray hair in the garage. Seriously.
That's
like,
just on Biaggi, too. I mean, in his beard, you know.
But I found that interesting that he actually managed to get some of the guys. I mean, both Aprilia was for this, and he requested it, apparently, that a lot of his old team. So that's really cool. I think that's really cool, like – getting the band back together, you know?
Yeah. Don't jinx the band. But, it was good stuff. Specific details of the race, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of notes or anything, and I'm just kind of going from memory, and I watched the race. I was lucky enough to be able to watch the races in Portland at Kelly's Olympian.
That's right.
And I was hanging out up there. Oh, it was great. I was hanging up there with Darren Carpenter and Dave Sangster and some other friends and stuff, and Teresa from Coos Bay. And I dragged to Kelly's Olympian on our little thing, and she enjoyed it a lot. But it was good stuff. But, you know, you're in a noisy environment, and I couldn't, you know, I'm not absolutely 100% focused on everything that's happening on the track every minute.
Sure.
You know how it is. Yeah.
Sure.
So off the top of my head, I don't recall anything in race one that was, like, you know, mind-shatteringly significant.
Well, I think that Spies hanging out behind Haga and so you know, Biaggi led for a lot of the way. Biaggi's very good at LaSalle. I mean, he's
been, right. Well, I meant, like, you know, like Spies going off in the first corner or something. Like that. There was nothing like
very
that.
Little like of that kind of stuff going on.
Right.
But that pass that Spies did on both of them, drafting both of them at the same time, that's like pure, like, American racing heritage stuff that I don't think a lot of racers would have even thought of. That's like the Daytona style, coming off the, you know, that banked corner and drafting past like three or four guys at a time. That's very, you don't see that very often. It was just really well done.
No, he's given Hagen and Biaggi certainly a huge run for their money, and he is doing very, very well. And it's actually notches things up as far as the level of, like, overall respect and cred that I think Spies and Mladen and American Suzuki in AMA, they all have. How good those two guys were.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at, you know, when you think back last year in AMA, it was like, you know, Spies and Mladen doing a race. And then several seconds later, we've got a whole bunch of other guys also doing a great race, but not, you know, they're not winning.
It's like having multiple classes on the same track at the same time because you don't have...
Yeah, like sports car racing. Yeah.
Pretty wild.
But yeah, no, it was an awesome race. You're right. Biaggi was leading for a long time. I was starting to think, you know, wow, you know, this is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, what are we doing here? But
I predict we're going to see Aprilia win a race pretty soon.
I think that's a possibility. I'm sort of watching the Qatar race, it was kind of like, well, you know, it could happen, but there's so much that happens in the last couple of laps on a superbike race.
Yeah, and especially to Biaggi, because he really does.
And it was such a tight group. I mean,
It totally was.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about Biaggi, I had no idea. A friend of mine pointed this out. Biaggi uses road pattern shifting.
No, I didn't know that.
Did you know that? Yeah, and I find that very interesting considering that he raced in 125s and in 250s for so long, because in a 250, you on a 250 or any smaller bike, you're going to be beginning your acceleration while you're still leaned over in the mid-corner. Like on a big bike, you'll probably wait a little longer and squirt the thing off a little bit more. But when you're on a smaller bike, you are really leaned over and you are upshifting. So that I find very interesting because, you know, that means the clearance is an issue. And that might explain why sometimes he goes, you know, a little bit wide in some corners, trying to get out of there, you know?
Yeah. And that might, it is kind of interesting. I hadn't heard that, before on Biaggi. Did he do that in 125s and 250s?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine him switching back and forth, and it kind of makes sense because he started with, you know, I think he rode a road bike for maybe like a year, and then he started racing.
Oh, I know. And that was like when he was 18 or 19 years old.
He really is an interesting person. He's a very different kind of racer than anybody else, and the fact that he, you know, this just kind of fits the whole like pattern, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got the cool little goatee going on.
but anyway, race one was you know, eventually won by Toesland. And once he got past those guys, it really, like, Toesland. I think Haga kind of gave him chase.
Spies.
Yeah,
Spies. You said Toesland.
Oh, Toesland. I was looking at some notes here. Sorry. Actually, yeah, you know, Ben Spies and James Toesland, I get it mixed up all the time. It's really funny. And we'll talk about this a little later on because I have something that I wanted to kind of discuss. But anyway, so Spies kind of took off after that point, and Haga really went into, like, you know, okay, I'm at Qatar, Takai doesn't do so well here, and this guy Spies is freaking kicking my butt. I'm going to just go into kind of like, you know,
maintenance mode
and make sure I lose as few points as possible. So he was just,
I think you're right. And also making sure that he finished ahead of Biaggi and all of that.
Oh, yeah. And he finished, period.
Finished, you know? Period.
He was actually very conservative riding. There was not a lot of the typical Haga sliding and craziness.
Right. Yeah. And this is often true. Sometimes that Haga does not finish the races. So yeah, it was Spies. The gap was, it was almost 2 seconds, 1.893. So Spies had opened up a fair gap, but nothing, you know, incredibly huge.
Well, the second race, he did a lot more than that.
The second race. Yeah. But the first race were, you know, 1.893.
Right.
Which, you know, like I said, is you know, it's a decent gap, several bike lengths, but like it's nothing crazy. But Haga and Biaggi, who came in third, were quite close. They were 0.3 different.
Yeah.
So yeah. Man, it's getting down there. That's at the part where you're a little bit worried about who's going to finish second, who's going to finish third.
Yeah, you know, and then with race two the way it went, and you have Spies breaking away very early on. Those finishes were incredibly close. I think, I don't know, if was Biaggi and Haga really close? I know that Nakano and who was he? There was like 2/1,000 of a second. There were like two really close finishes in the second race.
In the second race, there was looking at the numbers wise, there was. I mean, jumping ahead, the second race, yeah, Spies' gap was only 1.274 over Haga,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, an even closer gap.
But
he was in control of the whole race. That's a good way to put it. He'd opened up his lead a little earlier, and, I mean, he was pushing hard the whole race, both races.
Yep.
But particularly, I think, in race two. And, there was no screwing around. And you know, he knew it. And he's that guy that can do that he can get out front and still clock in the fast laps. You know, he doesn't have to be battling with somebody.
Right. But definitely.
And yeah. And his mom was there. You know, we finally eventually saw her on TV. So,
you know, so I was very frustrated to see Ben Spies winning. No, to see Ben Spies winning, and I surprised myself by thinking that.
I want Haka to win, dude. I'm rooting for Haka on this one. I'm
definitely rooting for Haka, but I was actually annoyed that it was that if it was Biagi that won, I would have been like, sweet. Something okay, and anyway, so
I can see that. Three out of four races now.
Spies has won. Three out of four races. And that if you really think about it, that first race, if he hadn't gone off, there's a good chance he would have won that race too. You
know? I agree.
Let's face it, he was on pole and he did a freaking great job in race two. He could have very well been on the podium and possibly have won that first race too. For a rookie to go in there on tracks that he's never been there before, that's freaking amazing.
I agree. But like we talked about last time on our call, and we've talked about in the past, that these first two races here are anomalies. They're a little different.
They are. I know once you get back to Europe, it's going to be different. But
I think it is worried. But I'm still, I agree. if Ben Spies runs away with this season, you know, rookie guy comes up from AMA, which is pretty much the sort of bastard stepchild of motorcycle racing in a lot of ways. On the world stage, it is, and so on and so forth. And then comes over to World Superbike and spanks these guys. That's not going to be good. And, especially for Haka.
I'm not sure if it's going to be – I think it's going to be bad for a lot of, like, Superbike regulars. But
that's what I mean. Yeah, it'll be great for Ben Spies.
it'll also be, like, amazing. I think it's really going to be amazing if he actually – and I'm just starting to think, like, Jesus, is he really – is it really that the Mladen and him are that much better than everybody else? And also – that the move to Superbikes instead of MotoGP might actually be really good for him.
Right. And you know? It is, well, I mean, the thing
it's,
is, though, with
Spies,
like a lateral
move in terms of equipment.
Yeah. Know? But, I mean, he's going from the Suzuki to the Yamaha. Now, like you said, the Yamaha this year is pretty special and all of that. And I'm not sure, as far as changes wise, where all the big four Japanese bikes are. On like a parity level,
right?
If Spies here we go. If Spies was out there on the Suzuki, would this be the same? You know, I'm not sure. I have no idea.
It's hard to say. That's a good point. It's hard to say. I mean, Kagayama and Nordkirchner are no pushovers, and they had a rough time at Qatar.
Well, yeah, and Nordkirchner is always hot and cold. He's Haga's teammate, and Haga's the guy. Just as Spies is the guy on his team that you know. And I mean, Sykes is an excellent racer. The guy's quality, but let's face facts. I think Yamaha, the factory, has put their eggs in the basket of Ben Spies.
Oh yeah.
And apparently, so far, 2 weekends into the schedule, it's paying off. I don't want to see a big runaway. Superbike is supposed to be close. Right. That means close racing and a close championship.
Yep. And I think we both agree that we want Haga to win.
That's just personal favoritism.
This is a great chance for him. He's got a championship winning bike under him and all that. So,
right. Yeah. But again, that's just our personal sort of favoritism, focusing in on it and all of that. That, you know, if Spies wins all these races, if he can win 3 out of 4 races throughout the season, then obviously he's going to deserve to win the championship.
Yeah. But it's going to be annoying. And this is the thing. This is the thing. Like, I was watching it. I was going, oh, shit. I mean, like, he's running away with this race, the second race again. What is up? And why am I upset about it? I mean, I was very excited about Ben Spies coming into World Superbikes. I was very excited about how well he did in Phillip Island. And all of a sudden, I wasn't. And I realized, and I don't know, are we done talking about the race itself? I mean, there was also a carbon copy on the podium. And then, we had Tom Sykes and...
We could talk about the results here in a second, but go ahead, continue. I like your
stream. Well, this is
going to
be a
stream.
Long one, so...
That's fine.
Okay. I mean, basically, I realized what it is. And I think all of us actually do this, even if we don't realize it. But we basically, we respect the talent and we respect, there's no denying that the guy is freaking talented. There's no denying that a guy like Casey Stoner is really talented. But yet, we don't get excited about these guys winning as much as we do, unless, you know, there's a nationalistic pride or something like that.
Or whatever, you know the guy, or you're from Texas, know, yeah, or something. Sure, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know his mom, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, but the bottom line is it really does come down to the freaking personality thing. And mm-hmm. Ben Spies bores me. Like,
I've said it all along, dude.
I know you have.
I'm a huge Nikki Hayden fan of MotoGP, and I mean, it's been hard to be a Nikki Hayden fan the last couple of years, you know. But I make no joke about that.
Here's basically like I realized how I this is really pretty ridiculous, but this is how I kind of like root for guys in any sport really, but especially motorcycle racing.
Uh-huh.
Would I enjoy hanging out with this dude? Like, yeah. would I be friends with this dude in real life?
That's fair.
Would this be the person that I would be rooting for because he's my friend? You know?
Yeah.
I just don't see myself being friends with a guy like Stoner or Spies or James Tolson or any of these guys. They're blank. They're kind of like they don't have much for me, aside from the fact that they're brilliant racers.
But a Noriyuki Haga, on the other hand.
Man, I'd totally love to party with Haga. Are you kidding me?
Right. You know? Well, and that's where my point, like, you watch their podium interviews and stuff. And Haga's a crack-up on those interviews.
Dude,
and
he's so funny. I mean, you can tell there's much more to him than just great racecraft.
Right. Yeah. And so it's maybe it's even almost like two different levels of personality/racer guy. Right, where you've got like Casey Stoner, very, very talented, can make that motorcycle do things that apparently other people are having great difficulty making it do, and is just a stud out there on the track. But there's just something about him that's not quite as charismatic as obviously not as Valentino Rossi or as Nikki Hayden even. Or, you know, hell, Colin Edwards.
Yeah.
I mean, all these guys. Yeah. I much, you know, and I'm not bashing Casey Stoner. Please don't send me emails. But I would rather see, you know, Rossi or Edwards or Hayden win just because I like those guys better.
Yeah.
And that is part of being a race fan is that, you know, it's the same guys racing every weekend. It's not like some mishmash of new people that just show up, you know. So you inevitably that you develop this sort of weird quasi television internet relationship with these guys.
Yeah.
I know him. He's my friend.
And the thing is that this is not like, hey, you guys got to get some personality. I mean, it's just, you know, this is just the way they are, right? And
exactly.
And but I also look back at Formula One when I used to be much more into Formula One. And kind of Michael Schumacher kind of ruined the sport for me because I just didn't really enjoy Michael Schumacher, you know, winning these races. He doesn't offer anything for me. Ayrton Senna back in those days, the guy was a freaking firecracker, you know.
Right.
It wasn't Juan just Pablo that he was winning Montoya. Races. Yeah, even Montoya.
When Montoya was racing in Formula One. Oh, he was so annoying, but that was his charm.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of characters, you know. I have a lot of respect for the quiet champion, but I don't root for him.
I agree. And this is as a spectator sport, which let's face facts. Despite, you know, your dreams of being the oldest MotoGP rookie and all of that, and it is a spectator sport for the vast majority of us. You know, it's relatively few the guys that even do club racing, you know, let alone like AMA or something like that racing. You know, those numbers are very, very small on the grand scheme of things. So this is how we know these people. Is because of what we read about them, what we see them say on interviews. I saw the article about Nikki Hayden doing something about motorcycle safety for the military. I barely read the article.
No, I didn't.
It was on MotoGP.com. But, you know, so there's Nikki Hayden in front of a Humvee. And it's like there's a connection there, you know, and I don't even know the details. I haven't seen any videos. Nikki Hayden has not told me to wear my orange reflective vest and all of that.
Divizioso and those guys like hung out with the llamas. Like, you think the people, you know, like the sharpest and stuff, like they would be all, "Ooh, I like this guy because he's hanging out with the llamas."
Yeah, you know, if you're into llamas.
I don't remember what
llamas
that
are very nice animals. They're like smart sheep.
So this actually, you know, so to keep going with this, I have this kind of goofy idea, which is basically, we've had these guys battle it out on the in the races and stuff, but what would happen if they actually like had a fist fight?
No, jeez.
So MotoGP rumbles, okay? Like I'm gonna run some fights by you. You tell me what you think, okay?
This podcast digresses into complete chaos.
But this was planned. This was totally planned. I totally planned this. I have this written out, okay? Because these are going to be interesting. So the easy one is Edwards versus James Tolson.
Yeah. See, I mean, Edwards all the way.
Yeah, he's going to kick his ass.
Yeah, well, big time. Come on. Tolson plays the piano. Edwards has a t-shirt gun.
Exactly. All right, there you go. Okay, good. This is one that everybody wants to – this is one everybody wants to actually see happen. Hayden versus Puig.
Oh, wow. You see, now there, I mean
– but this Puig is a tricky one. It's a tricky one.
It is a tricky one. It is a tricky one.
Puig might be kidney punching and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. Is Hayden – Hayden's a big guy, comparatively speaking. And you know, he's from Kentucky, so there's probably some brawling. And he's got two brothers, you know? So, you know, he's got something going on. But Puig is a bastard. So,
yeah, exactly.
I think that one might be a run for the money. Yeah. I really don't know what to call that one.
I think I would probably give Hayden the edge because he's a little bit taller, but you know he's got a little better reach.
Actually, he's quite a bit taller, isn't he? I mean, but yeah, whatever.
He's got a better reach, and you can probably you know keep him at bay.
Right, and that Kentucky thing's gotta count for something. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. All right, you ready for the next one?
Okay, go ahead. This is actually kind of fun.
All right. Rossi versus Agostini.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
I'd have to go with Agostini.
Oh, totally,
fight.
Totally.
Dude, yeah, old school.
I think when it comes to fighting, I think Rossi would just fold.
Yeah, like, he'd be kind of a girly man.
I think he'd fold. And Agostini is the man. You know, I mean, he's like a gunslinger's type.
I'm gonna go out on a big limb here.
Yeah,
and this is probably gonna generate an email. If you had Agostini now riding now motorcycles, having grown up now. Mm-hmm. Right? He would be better than Rossi. He might not be as charismatic. He might not be as full on the whole package. But I think on a race for race, okay, Agostini and Rossi go out there and race on the same motorcycles that they've had the same amount of experience on and this and that and the other and same tires, blah, blah, blah. I think Agostini would give Rossi more than a run for his money and would probably win.
And based on what? I mean, I think I agree.
A hunch as much as anything.
Okay.
Agostini was out there on these motorcycles with the flexi frame and shit tires and just
an
all-star. You know what I mean?
And I think though that there is one aspect of Rossi that we don't know anything about Agostini, which is just the level of intelligence and technical know-how.
Yeah.
Which is very important these days. So
that's true. That's
Rossi
true.
Rossi does have an edge, I think, in that sense. We don't know. I mean, but I think he has.
But my little scenario is assuming that Agostini has come up on the same equipment.
True.
So he may have also developed that same level of stuff. And I'll admit that is a very, very good point. But just a one for one. It's like
he was pretty fearless dude. So yeah,
throwing it in Formula One terms. If Ayrton Senna had not died, Michael Schumacher would not have achieved what he achieved. If Fangio was racing those guys, I mean, come on, you know. If Barry Sheen came up in the motorcycle world and raced against these guys, come on, all that champagne and women, you know, that's gonna count for something. And Brute by Fabergé.
So we're gonna go with Agostini for that one, right?
Yes, I'm going with Agostini for the
for the fist fight. Okay, I'm going to do eight of these, so we're only like three.
Wow.
All right, next one is Kenny Roberts Sr. versus Carl Fogarty.
Oh, That's a good one, dude. You put a lot of thought into this.
I got to tell you out there,
and listeners and everything, this has totally sprung on me. This is not – Jules did not prep me for this at all, which thanks a lot, Jules. You know, as soon as you say Kenny Roberts Sr., I was going to say he's the winner. But then when you match him against Carl Fogarty in a fist fight,
mm-hmm.
I'd go with Carl Fogarty.
Really? Interesting.
I would.
Interesting.
I would.
I think I would go with Roberts because I think Roberts would be – I think Fogarty is so much talk. He'd do a lot of talking and uh-huh. kind of like, come on, get, you know, come
chest
at
beating and
And Kenny Sr. would just punch him.
That makes a lot of sense, you know? Actually. I might almost have to rethink my answer, but I'll stick with it because it was my original answer.
Okay.
It may be somewhat going back on the same thing of Pooch and Hayden of the dirty fighter thing. If anybody's going to be a dirty fighter in that matchup, it would be Fogarty.
Yeah, and by the way, anybody who's listening to this wants to send in what they think would happen, let us know.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. This is a lot of fun. We should have done this a long time ago.
All right.
And we need, if you've got eight of them, I think we've done, what, four? So we need to get going.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next one is this was not, it may not sound as interesting, but this is a knockout tournament, so we're going to have these guys survive to later rounds, possibly. So anyway, Tony Elias versus Danny Pedrosa.
Elias, pretty much without a doubt.
Yeah. I specifically put somebody kind of his size because anyone's going to kick his ass. Let's face facts.
I mean, yeah. You know, you'd have to match him against like, I can't even think, you know, some actress, you know.
Michael Jackson, maybe?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Danny Pedrosa versus Michael Jackson. That's a much fairer
fight. Actually, probably. Oh, actually, that was really wrong. All right.
That was bad.
So, this one I think a lot of people would appreciate. Biagi versus McDuin.
Oh, wow.
Without a doubt, we know that McDuin would kick his butt. But I also think that this would be a very interesting one because I think he really wanted to kick Biagi's butt.
And now we're getting into the area where I wasn't a MotoGP fan during the McDuin era,
uh-huh.
so I don't feel like I sort of know him. But just from what I know,
okay. Well, you've seen Faster,
yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Look at the way Duke talks about Biagi. He's like, oh, Biagi.
Right. And so from what I know, yes, I would think that McDuin probably would, because again, I think McDuin is a bit of a.
Well, dude, he had those bar fights. I mean, he swings.
Yeah,
exactly. He totally swings. You know.
Yeah, he's a manly man.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Biagi's not, because I think Biagi has that bit of that sort of same edge. But I just think in that one, I would go with Duin.
I think Biagi would probably, you know, he could be like a little dervish, you know, whirlwind type of thing. So he could be.
But come on,
dangerous.
Let's face facts. Valentino Rossi hit. Biagi in an actual real life fist fight.
Yeah, but dude, that was a cat fight. They scratched each other.
I know. A mosquito bit me. But still, Rossi made a mark.
Yeah.
And you know, and so I think that Duin could take Biagi no problem.
Cool.
All right. Are we talking, by the way, fist fight like, you know, Marquis of Queensberry rules or like Ultimate Fighting?
Ultimate Fighting. No, just basically, you know, bar fly. You know, back in the alley. You know, bare fists,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of guts. So,
all right.
I got two left. So, Haga versus Bayless.
Oh wow, that's another good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, man. Ryan, you did put a lot of thought in this. My gut instinct, because I'm a Haga fan, is to go with Haga because he's a win it or bin it kind of guy. And I think that would translate somewhat into his fist fighting style. But Bayless is from Australia.
Yeah.
In Land Down Under.
Those guys,
and
you
all
know,
of that.
Those guys,
and,
those guys castrate sheep with their teeth, so.
Right, pretty much. So, I don't know. I'm going to call that one a draw.
Yeah, I was very, I couldn't pick it. I couldn't pick it. I had a tough time picking it. Because I think.
And you made it up, even.
Yeah, but I specifically made it up because those guys. You know, they have a relationship.
Yeah. And it would be, I mean, not that we obviously, come on guys, we don't want to see these guys having fistfights, but you know, it's just, it's fun. It is funny to think about. Okay. Last one.
Last one is, Ruben Shouts against, Cynthia Gibernau.
Oh, wow. Come on. Chaos. All the way.
All the way. Yeah. I threw that one in there because they're fairly, Chaos is a tall guy, so he's got a better reach.
He's got a reach. He's got a reach.
Fairly, I think pretty much they're kind of equal in mass. I mean, Gibernau is not a pushover, but I think we all know that he's kind of a pussy, so. Chaos is just a madman.
Two things immediately come to mind. Well, three things. Ruben Chaos is not afraid of crashing, so he doesn't mind physical pain. Sete would be worried about his hair. And Sete's girlfriend would presumably be watching this, and I think that would affect Sete. Not in a good way, necessarily.
So, yeah, okay.
So I got to go with Chaos.
Okay, good enough.
Yes.
Well, we're not done yet.
By the way, speaking of Chaos, real quick, super digression here. We had an email from, which I don't have my email open, so I don't have his name in front of me, sorry. But why do we say Chaos instead of Zaus?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, and the official answer is that Ruben Chaos says it Chaos. And even though, but he's also one of those guys that doesn't care when other people screw up his name, so he doesn't like go around correcting them and all of that. And that's why we say Chaos.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so now we're on to round two because we take the winners from the previous round.
Holy crap. Yeah, I didn't know we were doing brackets.
I'm not kidding. We're going all the way, dude. All right.
Okay.
So now we have Edwards versus Hayden from the previous round.
I'm going to go with Edwards on that one. Yeah, I'm going to go with Edwards.
I think so, too.
Yeah, just age and experience. And
wiliness and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Edwards would win that one. Edwards, doesn't he have, like, a farm? He wrestles cattle and shit. I mean, you know, he's. It's calling all the way on that one.
All right, cool. Agostini and Fogarty. Because we have Fogarty over Roberts Sr. I was on the edge there with Roberts Sr. Both those fights would have been interesting. Agostini versus Roberts would have been very interesting. Agostini versus Fogarty also interesting. But I think Agostini would take that one.
Oh, really? I was going to say Fogarty would take that one.
Oh, really?
Maybe I'm giving too much credit to Fogarty. Yeah.
I mean, Fogarty just let his mouth run so much that to the point where I almost think that in a fight, he'd hide behind his bodyguards and be pointing at you from behind his bodyguards going, F you, really? Buddy, you know, whatever. On the other hand, he might just, you know, he might just open up on you, so I don't know.
I'm just, I kind of thinking that when you have that big of a mouth, that you better be able to back it up once in a while. So I'm kind of still going with that and thinking that Agostini is really, relatively speaking, a class guy. So probably doesn't get in a lot of fistfights. So I would just, that's why I'm going with Fogarty on that one.
Okay. I'm gonna go with whatever you say here. So,
cause you got to make the brackets.
Yeah. I'm making the bracket for the next one. So Doing versus Elias.
Doing. All right. No doubt about it.
No doubt there. How about Bayless versus Chaos?
Oh,
he's a that's really actually big kind of guy interesting. And a really little guy.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming we picked Bayless over Haga. I mean, I think it was very close, but I think Bayless, you know, being Australian and all that.
And that's what we said, wasn't it? Yeah, the Australian factor. Yeah. Although, you know, who knows? Haga might have done all kinds of martial arts or something. But
he is a samurai slide, so.
Yeah, that's in the past. So Bayless and Chaos. Wow. And the thing is, they're actually both very nice guys. You know, you see their interviews and stuff, and which, like we were talking about, the interviews, that they just seem like nice people. So it'd be a little hard to imagine in any event. I'm going to go with Bayless.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's got a bit of the winner in him, if you want to call it that.
He'd have to do some pretty difficult physical things to do to actually beat.
Chaz, dude, he could get physically. Inside. He could get inside that freaking gigantic gorilla yeah. reach that Chaz would have, and take him down. Okay, I mean,
good. Let's go with Bayless. I like it. So now we're left with Edwards versus Fogarty.
Now here, and I'll admit I'm a little bit influenced by all of our comments about Carl Fogarty and everything, but I'm going to go with Edwards.
I think so too.
I think that Edwards can take Fogarty.
I think so too, and I think that he would really want to. They did overlap a little bit, so you know.
That's a good point.
I mean, a lot of this thing has to deal with also like the motivation, right? Like if you're just there, like hey, two guys get thrown in the ring, whatever. But if you actually like. I've dealt with this guy, Fogarty, you know, as a superbike racer yourself. I think Colin would actually want to kick his ass. There's a lot of people. I was actually going to throw Kaczynski in there, but Kaczynski doesn't really fit the MotoGP Rumble thing as much. I don't know. He wasn't that much of a piece. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. Edwards, I'm totally with you on that one.
I would go with Edwards on
that. So Edwards is going basically to the final.
Wow. Yeah, this is awesome.
All right. And then Doohan versus Bayless, which is, I think, very interesting. Because they have some similarities, you know. But
there's a lot of similarities. I'd have to go with Doohan on that one.
Me too, because I think that Doohan has a sharper edge to him. I think
Bayless is kind of... Bayless is too nice a guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a family guy type of thing and all of that. Yeah. I mean, some of these would have been interesting if it was like... like Bazashin and Bayless, you know, that would be a bit different. But no, I think that Doohan and Bayless, I'm going to go with, yeah.
So now we were left with Edwards and Doohan. And this one I could not, I like, I'm looking at it and I'm like thinking, I don't know. I mean.
Again, wow.
I think Edwards has physical advantage, but Doohan has a... We know he likes to...
A mental advantage, a thing.
He likes to rumble.
Yeah, I think he does.
So let's leave this one open and let's have people write in.
Let's have some emails about that. And I'm going to work on... because I've been a little bit slacker on answering my emails lately, but I will... this is fun. So
All right.
So Edwards versus Doohan in a fist fight with possibly some groundwork, you know, not full on... Ultimate Fighting Championship rules, but like, you know, the alley bar fight.
Right.
That gets broken up in a reasonable amount of time. So we're not talking like, you know, hospital trips.
Yeah. We don't want anybody getting hurt too bad.
No, certainly not. I wonder if, you know, any of these, you know, will Colin Edwards hear about this? What the hell are those guys talking about? You know? I'm going to shoot a t-shirt right at his chest next year. For goodness sake.
Here, it's that Moses POD guy. All right.
Yeah, that.
Awesome. Anyway, I thought that was fun. So
it was interesting. It was definitely different.
this all kind of grew out of the whole personality thing. It's like, you know, these guys have some fire that's not just tied to the racing, you know, and guys
it's
like
more
Spies,
than just the technical, right?
Yeah, and guys like Spies and Stoner, they just, you know, it's like life ends after they leave the racetrack and they just become normal, kind of. Not very super interesting people, so I don't know. I mean, I want Haga to do well in superbikes, and I have a bad feeling that Ben Spies is going to just kick butt. He's really talented. He's an incredibly talented guy, and you can tell that the bike is in really good shape, and that guy is just he's a different class than we're used to seeing.
Well, I mean, come on. The results from race one and race two at Qatar were the same. Spies, Haga, Biaggi. And I think that does say something about the level of motorcycle riding ability, not fist fighting ability. But, and Spies is surprising me. I mean, I knew Spies would do well. When Spies went to World Supers and all of that, I knew that it was going to be an exciting ball game. But as far as race results and everything, he has already, I think... taken it to somewhat of a different level. Now, only two weekends that are a little bit of anomalies, because when we go to what Valencia is our next round, right, for World Supers,
right?
It might be a different ball game. It might not. It might still be another Spies win. It's hard to say.
Basically, I think we'll find out when they get to Europe. We're going to find out how it's going to go. I think we're going to be able to make a prediction. Right now, it's hard to do, but still, 3 out of 4 on tracks that he hasn't actually been at before.
That's
ever.
Pretty damn impressive. It is amazing. You can't go wrong. And I mean, Sykes came in 7th in race 1 and 5th in race 2. So I mean, you can't say it's just the bike and all of that. Actually, where did
Fabrizio the terrible?
Yeah, let's check out Fabrizio because Fabrizio
had a terrible day. Oh, he really had a bad day.
Well, he crashed out of race 1 there in Qatar.
Yeah, but he crashed out, like,
he crashed out of race 2.
Yeah, but he crashed out that, like, leading or anything like that. So
no, exactly. And on the other hand, though, not to knock Michel Fabrizio, talking a whole different class than Norihiro Haga.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just he's the teammate. He's the sidekick. He's the other guy. And
he was also the sidekick for Bayless, which might be a little frustrating for him. But, you know, he's now 24, 25.
Yeah. On the other hand, look, the guy gets paid to ride motorcycles for a living. I mean, you know, how much can you complain?
Yeah.
The guy that might be like Carlos Checa, okay, finished 5th in race 1 and 13th in race 2. And he's on the... Well, he's on the Hansgrohe Tentacati Honda.
He had some really good practice sessions too. So
yes, he did.
I expected him to do better.
Right, and other than the fact that he's 89, it's the guy is incredibly talented.
Yeah,
and not afraid to bash the fairings and all of that, which is what we see in World Superbike much more than MotoGP. And he puts he'll put the pass on people and all of that. Checa's a talented guy, but I think we're going to see mixed results from him throughout the whole season.
Yeah. He's already kind of cut himself down from where he was when he came in last year. So
yeah,
I'm a little disappointed that old man Checa is not figuring it a little more.
What do you think of now, talking about old men, Courser? Going out there on the BMW.
It's interesting. I think basically he knows his career is kind of wrapping up. And I think a lot of people are saying that was an idiotic move. But I actually really think it was a good move. Because he gets to put his expertise. He's a very good technical guy. And he gets to put his expertise in helping develop a new machine. Maybe he doesn't care about. I mean, maybe the fans will not remember this fact, but everybody else will for sure. That if the BMW actually becomes a competitive machine, that he's going to be credited with a lot of that. So, and I'm sure that there's good money, and I'm sure that the motivation to finish 8th is. I mean, it's not depressing to finish 8th on a machine like the BMW.
I do agree that he's like, I'm going to help this factory do better.
Yeah.
And I think that's I can see Courser taking that as a motivation,
He just seems like the kind of guy that is much more interested in the actual racing and technology than in the fame,
Yeah. That's probably pretty fair. And, I've joked about take the bags off the BMW and go out there and race it and all that. But it's, they obviously haven't jumped out of the gate the same way that Aprilia have. But it's quite a bit different story anyways because, I mean, these guys build different bikes, as a factory.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I mean,
how long has it been since Beyond BMW has been, as far as racing, real racing, not the Boxer Cup, which was interesting in its own way, but... It was the Boxer Cup, sure. It's a spec race and all of that. That's different. Other than that, BMW hasn't been a name in racing since the
60s, probably.
Maybe the 60s. I'm almost thinking the 50s. Mm. And, a long time ago. And that these guys, and so for them to, but whereas Aprilia, you think of Aprilia and you think of a sporty motorcycle. You think of this Ducati wannabe company.
Right.
Right?
Right. Oh, they'd hate to hear that, actually.
Well, hey, it's a fact. I mean, yeah. Come on. And but with BMW, you know, they're not a sport bike company. They're a sporty motorcycle company. And for them to jump into World Supers is, I think, a bit of a more of a stretch than it is for Aprilia.
Yeah. I agree.
And I think that your call on Courser, that Courser doesn't have a problem with being the guy that develops this motorcycle is, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Just, I've gotten a lot of mail from people like, fix your damn Ducati. It's done. I'm picking it up tomorrow. I'm so psyched.
Oh, it's fixed?
Yeah. It's done.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And well, when you said it's done, I almost thought it was like, I've given up.
No, actually, there was not that much wrong with it. There was a problem with the starter clutch, which was causing the whole thing to vibrate. Awesome. Yep.
There was not that much wrong with it. I only had to spend $3,000.
I got hooked up pretty well. Valencia is April 5th. So we've got one more Superbike race before we start off the MotoGP season. But I have a feeling that we're not going to stop talking about World Superbikes.
No, I know. I agree. And I'm not planning on changing the name of the show anytime soon or anything like that. But let's face facts. World Supers is some interesting stuff this year. It really, really is. It's been interesting stuff in the past. It's just that there's still a magic to MotoGP.
Yeah.
And I don't see that going away. I still think there's going to be a magic, but you know, we've been reading a lot of bad news lately. You know, Kawasaki pulling out and Dorna doing everything they possibly can do to get, you know, please put one more motorcycle on the grid and all of that sort of thing.
And the whole other thing is actually getting complicated as well, because they apparently are only going to get support from Kawasaki through the Jerez test, and that's it. After that, they're on their own. And there's Kropotkin writes that there's been some hints that Ilmor might get involved, because they really still want to get in MotoGP, and this might be a cheap way for them to get into it by helping, you know, develop this bike. But it's going to get abandoned by Kawasaki before the season starts. So,
oh,
I don't know. Melandri's...
he's screwed.
He's basically screwed.
I mean, come on. He'll be lucky to finish not last.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, that is sad to say, you know?
Yeah.
Because I like Marco Melandri, and I think Kawasaki makes some good motorcycles. But Kawasaki is the smallest of the big four Japanese bikes. And...
Which still makes them bigger than like Aprilia or BMW.
Exactly, their focus is on Kawasaki's got to think about building, you know, ships and stuff like that. You know, so it's a bit different.
Sure.
And that's part of the problem with the Japanese factories.
Like they threw almost everything into AMA. They're kind of leaving World Superbike and MotoGP.
But they suck in AMA as well. I mean, unless something changes this year drastically, I don't see AMA being a huge amount different. Granted, I haven't been following the AMA news at all.
But I'm just saying, just think about it. Like, if you're going to look at marketplaces for bikes that, you know, that are not like two-stroke little beaters,
right?
Where are you going to go? Where do you want to sell your bikes? You want to sell them in America, and in America, the AMA is still watched more than Superbikes or MotoGP. So. It kind of makes sense.
Is that true? Do you think anymore?
Well, it was true. It's very interesting now, because it'd be very interesting to see what the numbers look like now.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that there's been a big flop.
But you're right. Whatever, if you go into the motorcycle dealership and you see a poster of this guy won the such and such championship, it's more likely to be an AMA guy.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's got
an American name very often,
right.
You know, and
right, and it sells motorcycles. So you know, as soon as Cycle World and Motorcyclist, which are the two big magazines over here, and they do their reviews and all of that. That sells a lot more motorcycles, I think, than a MotoGP win. And it's sad to say, but it's the way it is. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. I have nothing else. I mean, I was going to say, like, if you and I had a fight, who do you think would win?
You probably would win, Jules, because I think, you know, you've got that
sort of... You've got that Navy thing going, though.
I got the Navy thing going on, yeah, but you have that sort of San Francisco and long hair and stuff that, you know, I don't know. I'd have to pull out the dirty, you know, get you on the ground and stomp on your chest sort of thing, you know?
You shoot me in the head.
I really don't want to do that, though, Jules. You know what I'd like to do with you is have a glass of beer.
Well, we'll see how it goes next time we hang out.
We'll have a fist fight. Let's go out in the back alley and
we'll drink a six pack and then have a little fist fight.
How about if we arm wrestle?
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, arm wrestle. Yeah, arm wrestling is much more acceptable to me. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Sweet.
But hey, one last thing.
Yeah.
Did you see Darren Carpenter's email about his work friend that bought the Road Glide?
No.
He didn't send it to me this time.
He didn't do it this time.
I got to launch my email.
Okay.
Darren Carpenter, our tame Omer racer up there, and he's a programmer. He actually codes for a living. And he wrote me an email saying that one of his buddies at work bought a new motorcycle, very first motorcycle, and this and that. And it's a Harley Davidson Road Glide, which is
a big
motorcycle.
Yeah. 15,000 cc's or something like that?
Something crazy, you know, and all kinds of bags and crap, you know. You know? And he said that the...
Did he take the riding test on it? Was he able to make it...
I doubt it at the GMV because those cones are about, 12 inches apart.
Yeah, yeah.
So the email is quoted, is subject, quote of the day. And he says, one of my coworkers told me yesterday that he bought his new motorcycle. It's his first motorcycle, and he bought the Harley Davidson Road Glide. Quote from the coworker was, quote, the sales guy told me that I can apply the front brake and not have to worry about the rear tire lifting off the ground. Darren says, I confirmed this for him. And I actually replied to Darren. I said, what did you go out in the parking lot and you just mash on the brake? You know? And he says, no, I did all the physics.
You know? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got 2,000 pounds. And,
yeah. All on the rear wheel.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
It was kind of funny. So, all right, that was a super interesting call, Jules, and we never even actually covered a lot of the race results other than the podiums of both things, but... Yeah.
They're out there on the web, you know? They're out there on the web. The races were fun. If you didn't get to see them and you've got a recording, or if you have a way to watch it, it's recommended that you see them both. They're both very interesting races.
And actually, with World Supers, you can see them at... worldsbk.com.
Yeah, you can see the full race. Right.
After the fact, you got to wait. I don't know how long it is, but they do show the full race, and you don't even have to have a subscription or anything. worldsbk.com, and you can check out the races. So if you haven't seen it, and if you're I think everybody out there is a motorcycle racing fan more than just a strictly MotoGP fan, and it's good to watch. There was good.
Totally. All right. Cool.
Right on. Well, let's call it a wrap, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Ciao.
Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and I've got on the line with me once again Eugene Laverty. Good evening, Eugene.
Hey, Jim.
So it's a few days, or just, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and captured this Saturday. We have 5 or 6 days after... what has probably been, clearly your high point of 2009, the Qatar race. Go ahead.
That was a hell of a weekend, looking back at it, as I'm sure you'll know. To get my first victory so early in the season was awesome. Qualifying, everything went perfectly, and I couldn't have asked for a better weekend, really.
You know, I was watching live timing and scoring last week. I know it was a little bit in off hours for us, and I remember watching, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I was watching QP1, and you were kind of, or the first pre-practice maybe, and you were kind of hovering around down towards the middle lower end, And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this may be a bit of a long weekend. And right before whatever session that was is you popped right up near the top. And I'm like, okay, it looks like that's going to be that kind of weekend. So your qualifying went well then?
Yeah, we started off steady. In the first practice, the track was really dirty. And we opted not to use any of the good rear tires. So yep. We would have more for qualifying and races. Because we have a limit on the rear tires, and the rear tire that we were all going to use for the race was actually the softer one. So I stayed out there in the harder one for the morning practice and just got a general feeling for the chassis and which direction we needed to go, because I could still understand that even though there was damn near no traction from the rear. But in first qualifying in the afternoon, once we put in the good rear tires, it started to build up. I was there on the second row after first qualifying, so I knew we were going to be there. A lot of other people, I guess, looking at us thought we're maybe just that bit off the pace, but I was just getting the bike right for me. And even on the second morning, which was Friday morning then, I was down in, I think, 11th position or something again. We were just working on a few things, but of course it popped up to second on the grid, which again probably surprised some people, which is always nice.
When you mentioned that the track is dirty there, it's kind of a different dirty than other places, and indeed I think they had some pretty strange weather that was causing some of the problems with sandstorms and whatnot, so you'd probably have a fairly clean line for part of it, but as soon as you got offline you'd be out in marbles.
Yeah, there'd been sandstorms around that time just a few days before, so when we get on the track, we were the first practice in the morning, the Super Sport boys, so if a rider was in front of you, all you seen was dust, even on the racing line, but it began to clean up a little bit, but especially off the racing line, the amount of dust that was going on your visor was ridiculous, and when you come in from a session and see the dust that was on your visor, you needed a few tear-offs out there.
And you had, overall, you came down to it, you had a great qualification effort and ended up second on the grid and, in fact, had one of the fastest times, fastest speeds, or nearly fastest speeds. And we'll talk about that later, because one of the things that, while you didn't have top speed all weekend, you had the grunt to get where you needed to go, clearly, down the front straight, which is where a lot of your action occurred during the weekend. But, I mean, you also had some other great sector times. So, you know, I'm going to ask you about, once we're done this, I'm going to want you to reflect back a year ago to the last time you raced in Qatar, because you want to talk about literally night and day, completely different outlook, huh?
Yeah, looking at last year, I was struggling with score points.
Let me talk about that real quick, because I went back and looked, and I'm holding the result sheets for March 9th of 2008, which was the opening race and a night race at Qatar for 250s. And you and your teammate didn't qualify real well, and you started the race back in, I think, 20 and 21st, and it didn't get much better from there, did it?
No, the clutch was terrible on the bike that weekend as well, so going off the start, the bike just barely moved, and I was already way off the back of the pack and into the first corner, so that just made me angry, and I was trying to make up time. I think I passed maybe three of them through the first section, and then came across my teammate and couldn't get around him because he was a late breaker, and ended up going down the inside of him and folding the front, and that was my Qatar weekend over. Just like that.
So. I can hear your voice. You're like, Jim, you know, you really didn't have to bring that up. I've been having a great week.
Yeah.
Well,
no, it's nice to look back at it because of how dismal last year was. And thinking about the night after the race, I couldn't sleep because I was just so disappointed. Whereas this time I couldn't sleep because I was so ecstatic. So it's two completely different feelings.
So, yeah, I mean, think about it. How far have you come? You went from a really, you know, kind of a downside, and especially in the exact location, you know, maybe 10 days later, a near 5 days later, a year later, and you're literally on top of the world. I mean, how cool is that?
It is. It really is cool. It never has sank in, I don't think. It's quite strange. The podium at Vallelonga last year was an awesome feeling, and I was overjoyed with that, whereas this, I was expecting it to come, not just quite as early, but, you know, I started this season looking at being a championship contender, so right now it looks like it's all just going according to plan. So I didn't really get the feeling of surprising myself for Fala Longo to get that podium was such a relief to realize that I was really back in the game, whereas now I'm just following the plan I had.
And without going into too much detail, can you walk me through some of the high points for you of the race itself?
I'd say the first corner was a decisive moment because my start was quite good. I did 3.0 seconds. I did not to 100 kilometers in 3.0 seconds, which is a whole shot, really,
sure,
if you do that. And
yep,
from second on the grid, Cal completely smoked me. And also Keenan and Andrew were ahead of me getting into the first corner, so I was fourth. But I knew where I could break, and I braked out round the outside of two of them, Keenan and Andrew, in the second, and I went round the outside of Cal on the right and went in the inside of him into the next left. So rather than, I went into the first corner in fourth and come out of it in first. So that was a decisive moment, really. And I stayed there and tried to push the pace a little bit, but I knew I wasn't getting away with maybe 10 laps to go, and rather than stay at the front and not know what them guys were doing behind me, knowing, you know, where they're pulling in on me and know where I'm pulling away from them, I dropped back a little bit and sized them up to see where Andrew in particular was quicker than me and where I was quicker than him. And it was a good job I did that because I could see some areas where Andrew was a lot stronger than me. His bike was stronger in a few areas where his gear suited, just where he passed me in the last corner. Coming up into those fast rides, his fifth gear was still pulling, whereas mine was too low in the revs and my bike was a little bit dead coming up into that area, even though it's full gas, and he was able to get up alongside me and there was nothing I could do about him.
Yep.
But I knew how strong I was in and around the last corner. On the last lap in particular, Andrew was so strong around the last left, the second to the last corner. He gapped me by a huge amount, and got into the last corner, I braked so hard and came right up onto his back wheel, and even Keenan Swafelgu, he tried to do it behind me and completely overshot because,
yep,
I went in so deep and turned it so hard in the front. And nailed it and drove towards Andrew and didn't even have to use his slipstream and got so much drive and went past him. And of course my engine was really strong as well, so I would just carry on what is made out of the corner and drive past him easily.
you say it all so casually, and then I sort of won, and that was cool. But it was. You know, it was funny. I was watching that through whatever methods I could live. In the United States, unfortunately, we're normally restricted, so sometimes in order to get around that, we have to do certain things. And I was watching it live at 4:30 in the morning. You know, the family's asleep, the whole house is asleep, and I couldn't help but let out a bit of a yell. And about 5 minutes later, my wife comes down and she goes, "Are you okay?" I'm like, oh, he just won. But yeah, that was awesome. And you had a podium ceremony that was certainly one to be proud of, for not only for the win, but for your flag and anthem and all that too. So
yeah, it was nice standing atop the podium for the first time, and I've went 34 races without a win. So just nice to be back where I feel I belong.
And clearly. Clearly one of the most humble press room talks that I've ever heard you give, and you can say it yourself, but you dedicated the race to Craig.
Yeah, well, after the work that Craig has done over the past few years,
yep,
that wasn't just dedicating it to his memory, it was honestly dedicating it to all the hard work he'd done, because without doubt, I wouldn't have the package underneath me if it wasn't for the work that Craig's done with the team over the past couple of years. The team last year was how it is, but even the year before, some of the staff, like Brains and the other guys, were there. So it's really been 2 years of hard work, and the package I have underneath me is all thanks to Craig in particular for developing it. And I couldn't ask for anything better than what I've got with the Olden suspension, the Motec electronics, and the engine. It's clear to see in TV it has the edge in the Ducati bikes at the minute, so I can't complain too much.
And that's a key point. You guys, and I believe you folks are also have a Motec gentleman working on your Motec with you this year, right?
Yeah, we've got Alan Bell, Okay. He's just so clued up, it's nice to go over and say, Alan, I've got this problem, can you just fix it? And he just, it's not too difficult for him, he knows exactly what to do, whereas electronics is a little bit difficult for guys who aren't 100% clued up. Not many teams have a guy like that on their side. There's only a few of them. I think the Yamaha guys have Marcus, who I work with as well, but it's just so nice to have somebody in there that can fine-tune things like that that you would rather have to ride around. If you didn't have the electronics package like that, you would just have to ride around it and let off the brakes a little bit to stop the bike backing in and just play with the clutch or whatever, but he can just dial it, so you just have to concentrate on your riding, really.
Have you had enough time to look at it to be able to look and read your own data? I mean, I've taken a look at data streams, at least coming off of the Morelli devices, but can you look at your data and read it, you know, not as well as he can for sure, but see where, you know, find something that's different?
I look at what I need to, and probably I know as well as anybody the parts that I need to know. The other parts that I don't really worry too much about in terms of the engine, and brains might show me from time to time, and Alan might show me just sort of a general understanding, but more what I would concentrate on is the riding side of it, and also overlaying laps from Craig's of last year's, and even from the team Miguel's. And it's been the last few years since 2007 was the first year I began to really study the data, and I've really got a good understanding of it and how it can benefit me as a rider, rather than trying to understand something that I don't need to. I look at what can benefit me over the course of a race weekend.
Sure. And they say the data never lies, but I know that sometimes you have to look at it and go, well.
Yeah. It was funny where in a few corners we were having severe chatter that we couldn't get rid of. It was a tire problem, but when I say about chatter, it usually is off the Richter scale, and that did show on Saturday afternoon on the fastest lap. On the second corner, the vibration just went off the Richter scale, and James couldn't believe his eyes.
That's when, and I've had the same thing before, when it's literally bouncing hard enough that each skip that you're seeing air under the front tire, that's never fun. Well, shoot. Well, hey, congratulations. That's just awesome. And the second race of the season now, what do you start thinking about? Tenkate is coming out or is getting the 2009 bikes for Valencia, I believe.
Yeah, they're going to have their 2009 bikes now, starting the European round, so I may give them a little bit more than what they've had, but you can just never bet against Tenkate. They've got such a good package, and the experience they've got there are the toughest competitors, without a doubt. They're the two guys that have to beat, and it's going to be a tough job to try and beat them in the championship. I'm under no illusions that I'm going to continue winning week in, week out, because the Tenkate team, as a collective unit, they're just so hard to beat. So we're going to have to work hard and continue in Valencia and try and consolidate that win with some more solid podium finishes, and when the win's there for the taking, go for it.
Yeah, I think just like the last few, this season is going to be a hardcore battled season down to the end. You know, when I talked to you last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, last week I think, I could hear in your voice that you didn't know you were going to win this weekend, I don't think, but I could hear it in your voice that it was going to come soon. And when I was watching qualifying and I saw you pop up that quickly, was one of the reasons why I said, well, I better stay up all night to watch this race. and it's very impressive that you've got a very clear head that, you know, this is going to be a fight. This is not a cakewalk. Nobody's thinking that. And yeah, you guys are going to have a lot of work, and this kind of redoubles the effort that all the other teams are going to be putting in, which in turn makes you guys have to work just as hard too.
And that's right. They're going to be burning the midnight oil to catch up on the horsepower that our bikes are putting out. There's no better guys at doing that than Tenkate.
Yeah.
The Super Sport Championship means so much to them. They've won it, I think, at least six years in a row now. I always lose count because there's so many.
Yeah.
And they're going to be looking to do that again. And in theory, they've never been in a stronger position, even though they've won it for so many years. This is their strongest campaign yet, with the last two seasons world champions on their backs. So looking at it from their point of view, how can they lose? But that's my job and Cal Kurtzel's job to try and make that happen.
I like that. Did you watch the race again already?
I've watched it twice. Okay. Watched it the two times was enough, so I watched it once and I thought there was a couple of things I wanted to watch the second time, so I turned it on and thought I'll just watch this a little bit. Ended up watching it all the way through again, so I was happy with most of the things in the riding. Usually you can pinpoint a lot of errors, but I really didn't make any, so that's the way I need to be riding for the majority of the season.
Yeah, it was a very clean race, and clearly the fewer errors that are made, obviously those are going to – any error is so critical, especially when you're as tight as that with your competitors. And nobody had a real gap in speed. And just as it always is with the smaller bikes, everything is down to corner speed and corner exits, and especially coming out of the straight. I mean, like you said, your pass on pit to get to the checkers first was strictly a measure of a better exit. And Cal tried the same thing and nearly put himself on his head, but he still got there.
Yeah, Cal made the mistake that I did in Phillip Island. He hit the Astro and exited the penultimate turn, but I was just so pissed with myself after the mistake in Phillip Island that cost me those 2 points for fourth position after a faultless race there that I said I wasn't going to make the same mistake in the last lap. And I made the last corner absolutely perfectly, and even if I didn't have the slight horsepower advantage, I still would have made it past Andrew in the exit of the final corner. I did it so perfectly, so I was pleased with that. And it's just nice to have that horsepower advantage that you can rely on to pull you through as well, in case you haven't got that little edge. So it means that you can ride a comfortable race, as I did, without making many mistakes, whereas the last 2 years, having to ride against guys that are on superior machinery, you've got to ride less to hang with them. So it was nice to be able to ride that little bit within yourself and think with the championship in mind.
Yep, and it's nice to be able to say to yourself, if I can do this right, with the skill and the knowledge that I have of this track, the bike will pull through for me. This is purely up to me.
Yeah.
Yep. Right on.
If I can do it for one lap in practice, I always think that I'm a firm believer, and there's no reason why you can't do it for 18 laps. A lot of guys do one lap wonders, but if I can do the lap time in practice, I'll usually do it in the race.
Absolutely. Well, all right. On to Valencia. How do you like that track?
Well, I don't mind the track, but in 2007 in particular, and I didn't race there in 2008, but in 2007, the big problem we had with that Honda chassis, there was a problem with it that was never addressed by the mechanics. The circuit of Valencia really highlighted that. We had a big problem with the rear, and with all the second, third gear corners, we were waiting to get on the power run Valencia. It made it a nightmare on that bike, so I had a disastrous weekend there. But I think with this bike working well, the chassis feeling good, there's no reason why I can't be right there at the front. The only reason I didn't have a good time in the past was because the bike wasn't set correctly.
I guess part of how you have to think when you go to these circuits is, yes, I know the way around them, but the machinery that I'm on now is no way comparable to what I had then. So my big bonus is I know how to get around it. I have the bike that'll get me there. Let's go and set it up and see what I need to do, and I should be back up at the front again.
Yeah, now there's myself, Andrew and Keenan, and of course Cal, seem to be the front four, and there's going to be a few wild cards in there, like especially last course at Valencia, and nobody's got to see the true potential of Gary McCoy yet, because both races he's had a bit of a nightmare. He's had the pace, but the result hasn't come for one reason or another. But in particular, those four guys, our level is all quite similar, and our bikes are as well, so you know going into the weekend that your bike's capable. It's just a matter of you getting up to speed and getting in there, and if you're not battling in there, then I'm doing something wrong.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks a bunch, Eugene, and thanks for your time. And we'll look forward to hearing what happens with you in Valencia. Hopefully I can I really hope you do as well, but I imagine that you probably got about a million phone calls, people trying to talk to you this week.
Yeah, in Qatar, I hadn't received many phone calls because people know not to ring, how expensive it is there. I haven't checked my phone bill, but I reckon that it was at least 100 quid's worth of phone bills just of people calling me, because I didn't want not to answer the phone calls. I thought I better do, so I will have my bonus money. I'll pay for that phone bill.
All right, well, thanks again, and good luck in the next round, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jim. I'll catch you soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
Well, I told you this show was a long one. Well, we're over an hour and a half, aren't we? So hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much for downloading the show. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. And I hope you had a good time with it. Thanks very much. And we will talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.